This is The Interchange Recharged. I'm David Banmiller. We typically focus on the big stories in energy coming out of the U.S., but a lot is happening in the Asia-Pacific region. As we've seen around the world, fossil fuel demand is increasing as countries prioritize energy security over decarbonization efforts. The potential is there, however. More than $3 trillion is expected to be pumped into renewable power generation over the next decade. How can Asia balance energy security with investment into low-carbon technologies? On the 9th of May this year, Wood Mackenzie's Energy and Natural Resources Summit returns to Singapore for its sixth year. Join expert speakers and analysts from renewable utilities, transmission operators, investment entities, and technology providers. Join the conversation around Asia's renewable future. What's needed to bring carbon capture into the mainstream? How can the region balance growth with sustainability? And how can the huge potential of wind and solar be delivered? Visit woodmac.com/events to find out more and secure your ticket. Now, onto the show. EVs, contrary to popular belief, are having a good time at the moment. Prices are down and sales are up. The global EV market is predicted to reach $802 billion by 2027, growing at a rate of 22% from 2020. With more EVs comes more batteries, and we need the most efficient, sustainable, and environmentally friendly batteries we can get. The benefits of an all-EV market are clear. The IEA's Global EV Outlook of 2020 notes that the existing global EV fleet avoided over 50 million tons of CO2 emissions in 2019 compared to ICE vehicles. Haresh Kamath is an expert in energy storage and clean tech at EPRI, the Electric Power Research Institute. EPRI is a nonprofit R&D organization focused on technology and research in energy. Battery costs have plummeted by nearly 90% in the past 14 years, sparking a surge in EV adoption. As the demand for EVs grows, with a 40% increase in sales from the last quarter of 2022 to the same period of 2023, the industry faces the challenge of scaling up infrastructure and ensuring the supply chain keeps pace. What's the potential for revolutionary technologies like solid-state batteries? And how can we develop more efficient recycling methods? Let's find out. Haresh, welcome to the show.
Thanks, David. Great to be here.
So tell me a little bit about EPRI and specifically your role within the organization.
Sure. So EPRI is a nonprofit research and development institute. We collaborate with 450 companies in 45 countries driving innovation for affordable, reliable, equitable, clean energy future. We're really focused on working towards a lot of the issues across the entire energy industry. So I'm director of cross-cutting technologies and energy storage. So my responsibilities, or part of my responsibilities, is to follow the battery technology area and just to see what developments are happening in technologies, what's happening in the battery markets and the direction of costs and the direction of sales, and how that's going to affect things like vehicle electrification and deployment of energy storage on the grid.
So these days, you guys are, I mean, you've been around for a long time, but I bet you haven't been as busy as you have been in probably the past decade.
Oh, it's, you know, there's more that's happened in the last decade than probably in the whole century before that in terms of what's going on in the grid. It's an amazing time and just an amazing time to see all of these developments just hit the grid at the same time.
So let's talk a little bit about EVs. They're struggling a little bit right now. You've got nickel and lithium producers have paused on some of the projects. Demand is a little bit down. I've seen a lot of announcements recently, though, that we'll talk about a little bit later, that's kind of hopefully to kickstart that market. But is that something that we ought to be concerned about? Do you think it's just a blip or something that might be more of a long-term trend?
Well, it's really interesting. The EV market is actually up a little bit from last year. You know, we saw 40% growth from the last quarter of 2023 from the last quarter of 2022. But what we're seeing is that, you know, there are a lot more OEMs in the space right now, and they're all trying to make as much book as possible. So what's happening is that a lot of those individual OEMs are not meeting their numbers as much as they'd like to. Overall, the trend, though, continues to be increased sales of EVs in the North American market. That said, you know, there are some challenges. We are seeing that consumers are a little slow, probably because of the cost of vehicles. They're a little bit higher in the U.S. than a lot of the other parts of the world, and that's a kind of an interesting thing. And also, I think that the lack of EV infrastructure, or actually just the fact that EV infrastructure hasn't been deployed as quickly as anticipated, is giving people a little bit of pause. So we are seeing, of course, the infrastructure investments that are being made right now, and that's going to change things rather rapidly over the next few years. And the costs are coming back down. As you mentioned, the battery materials market, the prices have gone down. We've seen a couple of boom-bust cycles in the lithium market, certainly over the last 14 or 15 years, just as a result of all of these things. So we'll continue to see that in the future. The price will go up a little bit, and then it'll start coming back down again. And we've already seen that two or three times, and we'll probably see that two or three more before 2030.
Interesting. So the growth opportunities, EVs, still there. We're still seeing robust demand. It's just when you factor in the number of OEMs that are coming into the market now, individual companies are announcing that their individual demands are down. And that's just because we've got more players.
That's right. Everybody knows this is the space to be in. And everybody's got a slightly different reason for what's happening in their own markets. So it's really interesting to see the detailed analyses that people are putting out there. But what we are seeing, the overall trend is that the vehicles are actually selling. The number of sales are going up.
And what do you think is driving the number of OEMs coming into the space? I mean, there's a multitude of reasons that it could be, but I'm curious to see the difference between a number of people trying to get into the market to take advantage of a growing market and be part of it, or if there's any individual technologies that people think this is a real game changer. And so they think that their specific technology, whether it be the auto, whether it be the battery, is actually going to set them apart from the rest.
Right. I think as far as the automotive OEMs are concerned, they just need to have some space in the EV market. And it's very much a global market. And if they want to play globally, then they'll have to have some way of developing products that fit into that area, that demand area. It takes a little time. And some of the OEMs have been there for years, and some of the OEMs are relatively new to the space. But they're all trying to come in at a breakneck speed, and all of them have very optimistic projections for their first few years, especially since they don't have much data. So they're trying to figure this market out, and that's going to take a little while.
And how are you seeing the trend for the costs of these EVs? I know that BYD has come out with a new vehicle that they're pricing at around $15,000 and trying to capture that market. Do you see the trend coming down in overall costs?
We are watching the prices fall. A lot of it is determined by the cost of the battery. The battery is probably the largest, single, most expensive component in an EV. And that is really what has been driving the cost of EVs since their release almost 15 years ago. And the price has come down tremendously, right? We've seen the price come down almost 90% in the last 14 years. And we're still watching that price fall. And, you know, especially in China, we've seen tremendous reduction in cost through just scale manufacturing. And that's really what BYD is doing with their vehicles. They've made some very impressive reductions in their prices. Not all of that is coming from the battery. There's certainly other parts of learning curve that are associated with those cost reductions. But what we're seeing, at least right now, the trend is a continued fall in price.
And I'm also seeing some of the trends on these EVs and the batteries with longer distances that are able to travel. I mean, how's that technology developing? Are you seeing great improvements there? Because that's always been a concern publicly of people when they're looking at EVs.
Right. So the most important trend for batteries is the cost. That's what everybody's really trying to focus on. But there is a secondary area, which is range, and just trying to stuff as much battery in the car as you can is part of the strategy that a lot of car manufacturers are taking. As they get into larger vehicles, they can put more battery on there, and then you'll start to see, I think, a lot more range. But you're also seeing technological improvement, just as you pointed out. One of the more exciting things that we've seen in the last couple of years is the introduction of cell-to-pack technology, which is essentially a more efficient way of packing cells into the battery, especially for lithium iron phosphate batteries. So there are different lithium ion chemistries that are used in these vehicles. Traditionally, a lot of the batteries have been a nickel, manganese, cobalt, aluminum blend in the cathode. And lithium iron phosphate has been kind of an alternative technology, which hasn't had quite as much energy in it per pound. And what's happened is that some of the manufacturers have found a way of packing these batteries in a way that actually gets more energy out there so that lithium iron phosphate becomes viable in EVs and competitive from a cost standpoint and a range standpoint with the NMCA technology. So that has been a really interesting development. That means that the range can be significantly higher while the cost comes down. So we'll see where that's taken in the next couple of years.
It's amazing the different technologies and compositions that are coming out almost weekly now on the battery side. I mean, we talked to a company that was using AI to be able to test the various compositions to come up with the optimal solution. But then you've got other things coming along, like the way to more efficiently pack the cells into the battery to drive that performance. How rapidly have you seen this technology develop? Because you say even just now from where we were a year or two ago, it's breakneck speed, but do you expect that to continue?
Well, you know, it's one of those things that when you observe it, it surprises you. We've talked about, you know, Moore's law for, you know, semiconductors, where the power of computing doubles every 2 years. Well, we don't quite get that with batteries, but we have seen about a regular 10% improvement in batteries about every year. So 10% improvement over 5 or 6 years can be significant. That can really add up. So if we continue that pace, well, you know, there's no telling whether we'll continue that pace, but so far, just watching what the manufacturers have been able to do really shows that, you know, we're going to see significantly higher ranges that go along with lower cost. So there's still a lot of room with lithium ion to improve the technology. And we think it's a pretty good chance that that will continue apace.
You know, coming out of winter, you always hear stories, particularly as it relates to the drive for EVs and kind of weather-related issues and the batteries. What do you see the manufacturers doing to kind of address some of those concerns on the battery side?
So a lot of the challenge with cold weather isn't even in the battery. It's in the, you know, just making sure that you can keep the passenger cabin warm. And that is relatively easy to do that with a gasoline engine because you have all this waste heat coming off the engine that you can just put into the passenger cabin basically and use it to warm the car. With batteries, you don't have that. So you actually have to take energy out of the battery to warm the passengers. So there are a lot of different ways that car manufacturers are trying to get around that, you know, better insulation in the vehicle, things like seat warmers and steering wheel warmers that warm just those parts so that you don't spend as much energy trying to keep the air in the vehicle. But overall, you know, I think the most important thing is just to continue to try to get the capacity of the battery higher so that it can accommodate those loads.
And based on some of the research that you guys have been looking at, where do you see as some of the big opportunities for investment in this space? You know, some of the areas that really could be game changers and drive even faster adoption or acceleration of the technology development.
So in the near term, as I mentioned, there's a lot of little things that we can do to improve battery performance. Packing technology is one such thing, and we talked about different chemistries. As we go further out, a lot of folks are looking at alternative chemistries for these batteries. Solid-state batteries are something that a lot of people talk about, and those are big differences. If we are going to go with something that big, it's going to take years to actually get there. It just takes a while because even if you've got the battery, you have to do some work to qualify it, to do all the different kinds of testing on it, to scale up the manufacturing, to be able to bring the cost down effectively. All of that takes a lot of time. So, you know, it's possible that in the next 7 or 8 years, we may have very different technologies that are out there, things like solid state batteries or, you know, completely different chemistries entirely that are being used in the place of lithium-ion batteries that we have today.
Do you see any challenges in attracting the capital necessary for some of these initiatives?
Well, the classic thing, you know, remember that we're looking at the entire ecosystem, and I think the biggest part of the industry that is receiving somewhat less investment is in the charging infrastructure. So that's kind of a chicken and egg issue, right? There are a lot of folks out there who want to invest in charging infrastructure, but it doesn't make sense to invest in charging infrastructure if the cars aren't on the road. And it's hard to get the cars on the road if the infrastructure is not in place. So that's a bit of a challenge. There are things that are changing that. There's a wide recognition in a lot of the regulatory commissions across the country that if EVs are something that they're, you know, have in their roadmap, that they've got to figure out what the charging infrastructure looks like. And there are also provisions in some of the recent legislation like the IRA, Inflation Reduction Act, which will provide incentives for charging infrastructure and ensure that there's charging infrastructure out there.
So, like you said, it's kind of the chicken and the egg situation with the EVs and the charging infrastructure build out. Are there any other challenges that you see with the infrastructure build out? I mean, it seems like compatibility might also be something that needs to be addressed, because I'll talk to some of my colleagues in the UK, and one of their problems is they've got the different chargers, and they'll show up at a station and the one charger for their particular car is broken or it's not working. And so, you know, trying to bring that together, is that one of the challenges you see as well?
Yes, it's unfortunate, but just the number of the different types of connectors that the chargers are using is a difficulty that is definitely there for the infrastructure rollout. Even here in the U.S., we have a few competing standards, and that is slowing the deployment of these out in a little ways. What's really interesting is that every challenge is also an opportunity. You know, the charging networks who get out there first and actually deploy a significant amount of infrastructure have a significant first mover advantage over everybody else. So the one obviously here in the U.S. is Tesla, who's deployed their supercharger network all over the country. So several of the automotive manufacturers are actually asking Tesla whether they can use their chargers and whether they can actually use that charging port as a standard of its own. So what we're seeing here is a development of de facto standards that just happen because there are a few infrastructure players who are out ahead of everybody else. And, you know, that's something that's a challenge because you have to wait for all of these different standards to battle it out before one wins. And that can take some time, right? In other parts of the world, they're getting around that by just simply mandating one. And they're saying, okay, well, we're all going to use this. But we haven't had that come to pass here in the U.S. yet.
Yeah, because that's always one of the concerns I have on the investment side is you talk to investors, they obviously want to pick the winner, right? So sometimes the capital is going to sit back and wait until they can determine the winner or who's getting a leg up and then put their capital behind that. And so I think that's just starting to delay a little bit of the advancement is people just with so many different technologies out there. I mean, just like the different compositions for batteries, they're sitting back waiting until someone emerges that they can say, that's where I'm throwing my capital behind. And then you kind of maybe narrow the playing field after that.
I think we'll start to see it really converge in the next year or two. It's really not too far off from a point where a lot of these standards seem to be converging. Even today, there are adapters that go back and forth between the different standards. So even if you don't have the right kind of connector, you can use an adapter and that will work in most of the cases. So I think a lot of those problems will be solved.
I've seen over the past 2 years, more old colleagues of mine that I never thought would be gung-ho on an EV are now looking at purchasing an EV. And part of the credit goes to the manufacturers, right? I mean, they've put out some slick models with all the bells and whistles that look really nice. And a lot of my old colleagues have looked at it and said, oh, that's a nice car. And then they realize it's an EV. And at first, maybe they said, no, that's not for me. And now they're looking to purchase. So a lot of credit goes to them for developing those cars. But I think demand's going to continue to rise.
Well, absolutely. If you looked at the market 10 years ago, you know, EV was its own category, right? You got a hatchback and it was an EV. And that was the only option you had. If you needed a minivan or if you needed a pickup truck, you were out of luck if you wanted an EV drivetrain. And so what the OEMs have come to believe is that there's enough of a market out there that they can differentiate and put in a electric vehicle drivetrain in a lot of different body styles. So you have some of these companies that are coming in and basically saying, wow, we have all of these different offerings. We have a EV minivan, we have an EV pickup truck, you know, an EV SUV, an EV sedan. That makes it a lot easier to be able to appeal to a wider audience of potential customers. After all, you know, the drivetrain is only one part of the reason that you're actually buying a vehicle. There are lots and lots of things that you're considering, and you know, it's really important to get what you're looking for. So a lot of customers are going to be interested in what the car is beyond just it being an EV.
You know, and driving towards electrification with the energy transition and getting more EVs on the road, obviously there's more infrastructure needed beyond just the charging station. There's the grid. What are your thoughts on the grid where it stands today and how we can make sure to progress that to be able to sustain much more electrification in the future as, in my mind, this continues to ramp up at a more accelerated pace?
Absolutely. There's going to need to be some investment on the grid side. And we're actually working with a number of utilities to look at how demand can be expected to change over time. We have a program called EVs to Scale, which is essentially a program that looks at what types of investments utilities might have to make to accommodate and to enable continued electrification of vehicles. So as the number increases, you know, there just have to be a certain number of investments that have to be made. There are a certain number of things that need to be done. There are lots of ways of doing that. It doesn't necessarily mean that there has to be a lot of infrastructure deployed. It can be things like being able to manage charging so that everybody gets their car charged, but at the same time, you're able to manage that with the grid as it exists. A large part of the grid is already able to accommodate a significant number of electric vehicles. So it's quite possible that for a lot of the grid, you know, not a lot of investment is going to be needed. But it's very necessary to examine all parts of it to make sure that nothing that arises would be a bottleneck for energy and to ensure that energy continues to be reliable and resilient.
Yeah, I think definitely a key piece that we've learned a lot about on this podcast is the enhancing technologies that are being developed and really just more appropriately manage the energy of the grid in a manner that you run things in the middle of the night, not loud so you can sleep, but just the energy management side of the grid will help alleviate some of that. And there's a lot of great advancements on that side as well.
Right. Yeah, there are lots of new technologies out there that help grid operators manage the power flows and help them ensure that the existing infrastructure gets utilized to the optimum degree. And I think that some of these technologies are really making a big difference already, and we'll see them used a lot more in the future.
And obviously with good battery technologies on the backside as well, not just for the EVs, but for homes and also just grid management as well.
Absolutely. Batteries are being used for just those kinds of applications to take some of the strain off of the grid in some places or to increase reliability and resilience in other places. In some places, it's just simply to manage the amount of renewable energy that's being generated, you know, to even it out. So there are a lot of applications for that. I mean, right now, the grid and the grid operators and utilities are leveraging the tremendous reduction in cost of batteries by the vehicle market to be able to deploy similar batteries on the grid. And it's been pretty incredible to watch the adoption of these battery systems and the impact that they're having in just being able to manage the grid a lot more effectively than we could, say, 15 years ago.
That's great. Now, on these batteries, something I've mentioned a number of times is the concern around supply chain. And you mentioned, I mean, there's technologies being developed that have different compositions, so maybe less of one material is being used than historical, but I still think it's going down to a lot of the same raw materials. And as we continue the expansion of this effort, what concerns do you have on making sure that we're able to maintain a supply chain that effectively meets demand?
So supply chain has been a concern for a long time, you know, given just the degree to which that we have the material available. You know, these materials, lithium, nickel, they're not uncommon. You know, lithium is a very common material, although the lithium production has not been huge. Historically, it's ramping up. So it's just a matter of being able to ramp up at the speed that is necessary for the industry to keep up with the demand. And that's going to certainly present some interesting challenges in the future. Most of the folks in the mining and extraction business that I've talked to anyway, don't seem to be too concerned about it. You know, it's certainly something that needs to be addressed, but it's not impossible. One of the other things that's a really big opportunity in the future will be recycling. One thing that's very different about batteries than fossil fuels is that when the battery is at the end of life, the lithium is all still there. So the materials can be taken out, extracted, and recycled and used in a new generation of batteries.
So yeah, the ramp up is definitely going to be a challenge. I mean, because as we look to deploy more on the grid, EV demand, that's the concern is, does that delay the adoption of EVs, make them more expensive? And so we're just kind of push back the timing of the energy transition because we're just maybe not able to meet the demand in the next, call it 5 years. And so everything just gets pushed back, you know, again, because those materials are probably going to go to the highest payer, right? These companies are in business for that.
Right. So far, you know, that's been predicted several times and it's never really come to pass. We've never seen a situation. I mean, so far, the supply has kept up with demand. In fact, I mean, as you pointed out earlier, it's been the demand side that sometimes is disappointing. Not because, again, you know, it's not increasing. It is increasing, but maybe it's not increasing as quickly as people would like.
Well, yeah. I mean, I hope that's the case. I think that there are ways to spur demand that the OEMs are already doing. Just want to make sure that the supply is there because it's a little bit of a longer time to get mines in place and get that supply up and running, more so than the oil and gas side just drilling a well.
Well, remember, the challenge is very similar. You have to take the material out of the ground, but then you also have to process it. Right now, the processing is the long pole in the tent. And in fact, a lot of the processing is happening, although the extraction is happening all over the world, a lot of the processing is happening in China. And that doesn't mean that that capacity can't be built elsewhere. It can if the investments are made. So far, the investments aren't being made elsewhere other than China. But I think there's a lot of potential, especially there are a lot of countries out there that are looking at this very closely and saying, well, do we want to develop a processing industry here, or are investigating how that's going to work out? So that's going to impact how it all works out in the next few years.
And you bring up the recycling aspect, which I think is going to be critical to this. The problem is we're a little bit early stages to have the supply for the recycling to really generate something that's meaningful. But I mean, at some point, we're going to have that supply as we get into the more mature side of the industry. There's a lot of batteries available to be recycled, and there are a number of different technologies to make that efficient, really get the core components out and deliver on that. So that's absolutely going to be something that's a key piece to a cyclical economy.
Absolutely. Recycling is key to a lot of different things as you look into the future. First of all, from a disposal standpoint, it would really be suboptimal to take all of these batteries and simply push them in a landfill. That's not what anybody wants to do. So it would be much more valuable if there was a system that allowed the collection of these batteries and making sure they get transported to recycling facilities that could extract the useful material out and take that material back to the manufacturing side so that they can be used in a new generation of batteries. The challenge is that recycling is still relatively inefficient. There's a lot of research that's being done to make recycling more efficient. And we hope that in the next few years, we'll have ways of doing that that allow us to recycle all or most of the batteries out there. Now, if the numbers of batteries that are being used continues to grow, and we anticipate that it will, the recycling will be able to satisfy most of that demand, but there'll still need to be some resource extraction necessary to satisfy that growth.
Right. No, absolutely. It's just another piece of everything and being able to meet the supply and the sustainability aspect of it. I mean, the good news is there's a lot more focus on making, like you said, recycling more efficient than 20 years ago. It was just one of those things that not maybe people thought about, and they weren't going to put money into developing new technologies because they probably weren't going to get the ROI necessary for it. But now with the global focus on this being a part in all different aspects, not just battery, but other word, to make a sustainable and cyclical environment, it's more focused. So I would hope that we'll see more technological advances on the recycling side in the next few years, probably more so than we've seen over the last 50.
That's right. Certainly, there's a lot of effort that's going into recycling research, and we're seeing a tremendous amount of new developments, new technologies, new approaches that are being implemented all the time. So it's likely that the next 10 years or so, we'll see a lot of developments in this area.
I mean, overall, it seems that, I mean, what I'm hearing from you, Haresh, is that there's a lot of optimism in this space as it relates to EVs and batteries, and that we could see a hockey stick acceleration of the technological development, the EV demand, battery technologies, all that coming within the next 5 or 10 years that is really going to be exciting.
Yeah, well, so we're already seeing tremendous growth. We've already seen this industry really start to take off. We've already seen tremendous cost reduction. We've already seen the technology improved substantially in the last 10 or 15 years, and it's only accelerating. There's only more investment that's going into this. There are only more OEMs that are taking this more seriously. There are a number of companies that are betting everything on the electric drivetrain. So we will have to see what happens, but certainly there's a lot of optimism.
Unfortunately, there's capital out there that people are willing to put into play to support it.
It certainly seems that way.
Well, Haresh, listen, I really appreciate you coming on the show. Great discussion. And like I said, after this talk, I have more optimism on EVs, at least over the next 5 to 10 years, than I probably did before. And that's nice to hear.
Great. Well, thank you very much, David. Appreciate the opportunity.
The Interchange is a Wood Mackenzie production. We'll be releasing the show every second Tuesday, So mark your diaries and subscribe so you don't miss an episode. I'm David Bandmiller. It's been a pleasure joining you. See you next time.